baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you're listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host. What's up, Goes?
Good evening.
Yes, good evening to you, too. Happy hump day. It's Wednesday, November 27th, one day shy of Thanksgiving. So first, let's get that out of the way. Happy Thanksgiving to all of Junkie Nation, the Raiders of the site, the listeners of the show. Without you all, honestly, our jobs aren't possible. We're kind of giving you one of those shout-outs that a lot of fighters give out to the troops, which, of course, stands for us as well. But really, man, it's
really, it's true, though.
Yeah. How many times does the managing editor or anybody associated with the site just say, hey, look, you know, let's give them more of this. Let's give them less of that and whatever, because we're always listening. So anybody that tunes in and or reads, you know, our site via the apps, you know, on your laptops, however you consume any content on MMA Junkie, we really are honestly thankful for you, for the time that you spend on our site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, it's kind of a dream job, and George is right. Like, the other day I got a message from somebody in Ethiopia, you know? That's a pretty large reach when you think about it. Like, yeah. The way we grew up, let's just say we were writing for a newspaper or something like that, we'd be lucky if somebody in Minnesota knew who we were.
Mm-hmm.
But Ethiopia, I mean, that's cool. And it really is cool to see all the support worldwide.
Yep, and the sport's going to continue to grow, folks. So you might as well get used to it and get familiar with MMA Junkie. Don't forget to download the free app. It works on all smartphones and tablets. So there's a little plug for that. And with that, let's get today's show started. It's really going to be a ton of news. And no events to break down, because even the one event that's happening this week goes, I think it's called WXC, and I think it's wrapping up right about now. So that's it. That was WXC 84 Warrior Wednesday. It's done. So even that's out of the way. But anyway, here we go with the news.
Are you a football fan? Then you don't want to miss NFL 100, a USA Today sports celebration of the NFL's 100th season.
From the best on-field performances to the draft's biggest busts, we're picking the top 100 players, moments, and teams since 1919. See if your favorites stack up to ours at usatoday.com/NFL100. Now, Goz and I just had a rough week because we lost a friend. We mentioned this on a couple previous shows, and this is dear to our heart. We're going to start with this, and then maybe we can slowly kick the show up, the vibe of the show up, you know, so that towards the end we can all leave a little bit more in a happy state. It's unfortunate that we have to announce that Anaya Blanchard, the stepdaughter of Walt Harris, has been confirmed to have passed. They found the human remains of Anaya Blanchard in Alabama along a highway. I mean, I hate that I even have to read this, okay? But they were discovered Monday in Macon County in Alabama. That confirmed, that DNA confirmed to be of Anaya Blanchard. And so now the authorities are treating this as a homicide. There is no more hope of bringing her home. She is gone. And so with heavy hearts, our deepest condolences to Walt Harris, his family, all of Anaya Blanchard's friends and family. Just what a terrible tragedy goes. What a horrible story, you know, that we had to basically live through these past few weeks. You know what I mean? Just, we know Walt really well. Mm-hmm. And the updates that came through, which we were just doing our job. But you could see the writing on the wall slowly but surely, and then finally to get, I mean, I'm sure the family will appreciate some closure. This isn't the closure they wanted.
Yeah, it's just such a horrible scenario. It's a nightmare scenario for a parent, for anyone, just to have that happen and have it happen so close to the holidays as well. I mean, if there's anything you can take out of this, is I'm actually kind of proud of our little MMA community and just how much people retweeted and just really stayed up on this. That was cool to see the support that Walt's getting, because Walt really is a good guy, man. He's so nice. He's always been nice to us, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart goes out to that family. That's a horrible thing. It's everybody's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Just over a month, I believe. On October 23rd, I think, is when it was last reported that she was seen, you know, the surveillance of that convenience store. Mm-hmm. And now, even though we're taping on November 27th, it was November 25th that this was confirmed. So, yeah, just over a month. But such terrible, terrible news. Rest in peace, Anaya Blanchard. Your family loves you, and they won't, I promise you, they won't forget you, man. You could just see a lot of heart, a lot of warmth, and speaking from the heart from that family in the interviews that I've seen. I'm sure it's going to be very, very tough for them to get over. And I hate to say this, but, you know, the whole thing just before the holidays, of death is tragic at any point. It's the holidays that kind of bring us together, you know what I mean? And I guess that's why people do say it. But, man, just a college student goes, so, you know, this young lady had a lot ahead of her.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of her life. You know, there's just so much there for her to live, and so many memories to be made, and just to know that there's people out there that can do these type of things, man, that's what really gets to me. I don't understand how somebody can do that and just turn around and live their life like nothing ever happened. That's a terrible person.
Throw the book at those three savages. They're up to three arrests on this, by the way. And, yeah, I don't know what could consume somebody to want to hurt people like that. Okay. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson. Big, big news that broke earlier this week, as the UFC is basically saying this fight is being targeted for April in Brooklyn. Khabib got his wish. He doesn't have to fight in Las Vegas. He also won't get an apology, though.
Mm-hmm.
But all we've seen is a bout agreement signed by Khabib Nurmagomedov, which I've come to find out by listening to SiriusXM Fight Nation, our old home. Anthony Smith revealed, he's a host now on one of the shows, revealed that just because you see that part of the contract, Tony's got his own contract that he could have signed. However, Tony has since tweeted, you know, hey, no more games. I'm open for business. Time to give the fans what they want. It just sounds to me like he has yet to sign. And then I saw a subsequent piece on MMA Junkie. Plot thickens as UFC tries to. So what I'm getting at is this is being targeted. It's not official, though. Now, I think it's just a matter of dollars and cents. But, and it looks like Khabib's done with that part. However, it looks like Tony might be scraping together, you know, a couple extra zeros.
I really don't understand that play at all. You know, I mean, really, at this point, you're right. Like, we're getting closer and closer to that fight, but you sit back and you think, well, why aren't we there? And the only thing that makes sense is that it's money. It always comes down to money. And I don't know, at this point, I mean, the money is in winning the belt. So I would imagine they probably gave Tony something pretty decent offer-wise. I would say take it, especially considering what's been going on in his personal life. Be happy that you're where you're at right now. A big chance. Take that opportunity and then turn around and really ask for the money then, I think. But right now, I wouldn't even mess with this scenario right now. I wouldn't mess with fate. You know, this fight being scheduled so many times and not going through. I just say you sign and then you make the best of this opportunity.
Yeah. Or, well, the other thing I could think of is he's worried about maybe the money he's going to get after, you know, because that's what boxing does. Boxing is per fight. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, like, just like Masvidal, all of a sudden he's a way bigger of a star than he was a year ago. So if he's stuck in an 8-fight contract, he's probably like, damn, take these shackles off. You know what I mean? But they don't really do that in MMA. But I think a lot of these fighters are starting to get a little bit of that taste. You're right, Goz. I think Tony just – needs to take the fight. Because what I'm scared of is if he plays hardball, where the UFC can go, we tried, Tony didn't want it, boom, it's Gaethje and Khabib. You know what I mean? Something like that. So, yeah, I understand that Tony needs to look out for himself, and I hope he is. But most importantly, I think agree to the terms of at least this fight and negotiate whatever's going to happen afterwards along the way. Or I don't know, man. It's so tough to say.
There's a different management group for him, too,
Balanji Group, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, as I think about what I'm saying, that might almost sound ridiculous. Sign now and then worry about the rest later. I'm thinking that when he signs now, he's also signing for the next couple fights afterwards, and that's, I think, probably – because think about the chip that guy carries on his shoulder. He's 14-1, and he's never fought for the Undisputed. He's fought for the interim. He beat Kevin Lee for that. But he's never fought for the Undisputed. Plus, the chip of having it stripped, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Again, through injury. But I just feel like he's been through a lot. And hell, goes even a few days ago. He's probably not sweating, but has to put up with Dana White and Floyd Mayweather teasing some sort of a return that might involve Khabib. I mean, this guy is a pinata.
Yeah, I mean, it's never really sat around. Well with him, too. The comments from Dana about the sunglasses, all that type of stuff, like... I don't know, dude. I see where he would be coming from, but if I'm him and I have confidence in my abilities, then I tell everybody around me, let me win this strap. I'm going to do my end. You guys make sure I'm taken care of after that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I have the confidence that he will sign, but it'd be tragic if he didn't. Okay. We're going to just blast through some news here. Paige VanZant goes, she returns to the strawweight division. In her last fight, she's going to meet Amanda Ribas. She hasn't been shy about saying she wants to test free agency. So she's going into this fight basically all in on herself. What I mean is, if she wins and she just has one of those performances where she captivates, she charms the audience, the UFC fans say, re-sign her, she looks great, you know. Then the UFC might want to consider, okay, hold on a second. Maybe we misread here. Maybe we misread the scouting report. But Amanda Ribas is that young lady that just defeated Mackenzie Dern, and she looked really, really good there. And this fight's happening in Brazil. You could tell the UFC's doing her zero favors in sending her over there in her last fight. So it's almost like, okay, if you win, we'll talk. But, yeah, I don't think you're going to win, like that type of thing. You know what I mean? They're just, it's like a lamb going to slaughter.
I feel like the UFC said, I don't know, offer her Amanda Ribas and maybe we get lucky. And she said, okay. And they went, really? Bet. This is great, right? If Paige VanZant wins, all right, you got Paige VanZant. You could probably get a couple other fights out of her for, you know, and her popularity. If she loses, she just put over what I think is going to be, I don't want to say a star, but I mean a really consistently good fighter. Mm-hmm. Amanda Ribas is no joke, dude. I think she's going to be a good fighter for the UFC. So I think it's kind of like a win-win situation for them.
You know, Paige, I will defend her like this. I think a lot of times people go like, she's just a cutie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's tough.
And she can scrap, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, she's 8-4 in MMA, but she's 5-3 in the UFC. That's a respectable UFC record. You know what I mean? I know one of her losses was to Rose, who became a world champion. One was to Jesse Jess, mm-hmm. when she attempted to fight at flyweight. But we've all seen Paige up close, and she's just not tall enough to carry the size. You know,
dealt with a lot of injuries.
Exactly.
She got bloodied up in the Rose fight.
Yeah.
And she fought through that, man. She's tough.
All I can say is good luck to 12 Gauge. She fights in March in Brasilia, Brazil. March 14th, I believe it's going to be one of those fight nights. But man, that I could see the writing on the wall on that one. John,
hey, even if she wins, okay, let's just say she wins. I mean,
it'd have to be a Masvidal type win, something so spectacular.
I don't see that she could sit back and go, now pay me. Like, I feel like we've already kind of been through that with Paige.
Yeah,
I think they've gotten the most they can out of her.
Of course I cheer for the UFC to do well. I cheer for all the promotions to do well, but that's the one thing that always will bother me a little bit is because when they've been partners with Fox or ESPN, here's what I'm getting at. If she has, let's just say she did have the 5-second running knee and she beats Ribas. And then that's usually where I go, and she's all over ESPN. But then you wonder, how much does the UFC have control over telling ESPN, don't run that highlight that much? You know what I mean?
Or do they just let it loose
and say, ESPN, cover the sport how you do? But that's what I'm saying is, if she does something so spectacular like that, and that's probably ridiculous, the running knee, but just something else, all right? And all of a sudden she gains some leverage, and she's just, holding on to some of the cards coming off a win like that, like, do their broadcast partner, can they be told to hold back a little bit on their coverage? Have you ever thought of that?
A little bit. I've actually thought of the scenario so many times, and a running knee, something like that, I guess could be good in the sense that I think something like that would probably do more for her career outside of the UFC than it would inside the UFC. Because inside the UFC, again, it's not really telling us much about her, right? A dominating win over Amanda Rivas, that's a tough opponent. Because
like that little jumpy switch kick that she hit on Beck Rawlings, mm-hmm. that was dope, man.
That was dope.
You know what I mean?
But if she can dominate Amanda Rivas, then I think we all go, hold on, maybe now she's a little bit more focused. Because it seems like Hollywood may have dried up a little bit, right? So maybe she's focused on being a fighter again. She's gotten past these nagging injuries. Maybe we have something here. Flying knee, I think, is the type of thing that goes on ESPN. You see at the top 10 and all yeah. that. And then I think that's where maybe not your Dancing with the Stars, but I don't know. I mean, I know that like, she did one of them cooking shows or stuff like that. Like, who knows?
Maybe and then the SI swimsuit,
the door
too.
For that.
It's pretty
yeah.
big, man.
So I think it would actually do more for her outside.
Her husband fights a Bellator. Maybe she's already made up her mind. Maybe that's where she's going. I don't know. I think a star like that, when they get a taste of the UFC, it's got to be hard to turn away from it. But
you know, like, I think
it's all about respect.
I think we all picture Bellator like Scott Coker just sitting there with bags of money just waiting for these people, you know? And I don't know that, like, he's just like all of us, right? Like, don't you kind of do the math and you say to yourself, well, wait a minute, her husband fights over here. She kind of wants to be here, too. I don't know that I need to throw all this money at her. Like,
right.
He's got to play that game as well,
and
right?
They don't even have a strawweight, an official one, because, like, Carrie Ann Melendez, yeah. she's been saying, hey, let's get an official one going here. If that's where the future is, to continue at 115, I guess she could go over there and just be a 25er. Who knows? All right, moving on. Dan Hooker versus Paul Felder. I love announcements like that.
Good fight.
I love hitting refresh on Junkie and then just seeing that. All right, so UFC's headed back to New Zealand. They're going to UFC Auckland. And that's the main event, folks, on February 22nd. As you can tell, a lot of cards are being filled out for 2020. This is one of them. Hooker versus Felder, UFC Auckland, main event. February 22nd. These are two studs at 155.
Yeah, they're both just fun fighters. Fun, like, I don't even know if this is going to make sense to people, but you know what this fight reminds me of when you hear something like this booked? It's, you know, when they would announce like the main event at WrestleMania, and sometimes you would go, well, I just kind of want to see who wins, but I don't know that the match would be great. But then somewhere along that card, usually like the Intercontinental matchup or something, that's where you go, dude, I can't miss that one.
Right.
Because those two are going to show up and go at it. That's what this fight feels like.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I don't know that a whole lot's going to be solved. I don't feel like a title fight's going to come out of this. But, man, is this going to be a scrap.
The pressure's on Felder because he's older and he's got the broadcasting that I know he's loving. I know he hates that cut to 155 pounds. And right now he's streaking. He's got a win streak going. But if he really wants those next tier guys like Ferguson, Gaethje, I'll even throw Cerrone in there, whoever, Kevin Lee. I mean, I don't know. Hell, I think Hooker's right up there with those guys. But maybe the top tier with that includes Poirier, Gaethje, Ferguson, Habib. Then this is it. He's got to win this fight. Mm-hmm. Now, Hooker's got a little bit more time on his side, I think. I think he's just got a longer future in the UFC ahead of him. But his pressure will just be coming from being the home country guy, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. Who has more pressure in this fight?
Yeah. All right. John Jones and Dominic Reyes, you all know that they're fighting. They're fighting in Houston at UFC. I believe it's going to be 246 because 246 was supposed to be here in Las Vegas on January 18th. They're turning that into UFC Fight Night 166. Or are we at that? 66? I don't know. But it's turning into a fight night. So that January 18th card that was supposed to be a pay-per-view here in Vegas at T-Mobile, I think they're shifting it to MGM. It's going to be a fight night. More on that later. There's another matchup that we'll talk about. But the first pay-per-view of 2020 will be in Houston, Texas on February 8th. John Jones versus Dominic Reyes. what I'm getting to is the odds have come out, goes. Jones opens as a minus 455 favorite. Reyes comes back at plus 300.
For the first time, when I saw that article, I purposely didn't click on it because I said, George is going to ask me what I think those odds are.
Oh, you would have preferred that
I was going to give my guess.
What was your guess? Be honest. What was your guess going to be?
My guess is going to be John Jones minus like 350 around there.
All right. Well, you weren't too far off. But here's the thing. Okay, odds, those are cute, George. Now what? You're right. Now what? We don't know. The fight's still a couple months away.
You agree with those?
Sounds about right. Jones is pretty popular.
But he hasn't had he hasn't looked
that's
great in the last matchup.
Exactly. So
let's say he looked great over Santos. That would make me believe that he would be somewhere in the
perfectly
minus 500 or 600, right?
Perfectly said.
So I don't know. I thought maybe he would drop somewhere around 350 just because he hadn't looked too great in that last matchup. But, hey, I mean,
he looked good against
Jones
Alex
at the end of the day.
He looked pretty good against Anthony Smith. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying, well, Smith could have fought better. But I just think, you know, Jones is formidable. But against Santos, Jones was, what's the perfect word? I guess he just looks susceptible for an upset. Whereas before, it just seemed like, nah, man, it's got to be an all-time great like DC. Somebody's going to have to, you know, get in there and clip him because everyone else is just a couple levels below. And this is the thing that's been frustrating me with the rankings report, with the spinning back click. You know, I've been trying to get more active there in the comments section, YouTube, or just on our page. And people keep saying, nah, dog, Jones all day when it comes to Jones and Izzy talk. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hold on a second. Jones just went to a split decision with a guy that was a middleweight a year ago in Thiago Santos. He was a middleweight a year ago. He moved up, scalped a few guys, and then got the title shot and took Jones with two bad knees, one really bad leg, to a split decision. You're going to tell me Izzy, who's undefeated and who's at the top of the middleweight, it's ridiculous to think he could move up and do it? Now, I don't want him to do it now because I think he's got to defend. He just became the undisputed champion. I'm looking at a stadium show in about a year and a year and a half. But don't tell me that Jones all day when he just struggled to beat a middleweight. All right?
That's the thing, though. And he has those performances, and then he comes back and looks great.
Perhaps.
Like, remember OSP when we were like, oh, my God, wait a minute, has John lost a step? And then he just comes back. Like, he does that from time to time. That's what's so frustrating.
Right? But he did leave evidence there, right?
Yeah, he did.
You can't say, my God, this guy's a middleweight. He can't move up to fight Jones. Motherfucker, Thiago Santos just did it. Now, Thiago Santos, I think, is a more, like, girthy, thick 85er that probably needed to do it just because the weight cut was tough, whereas Israel Adesanya is a little bit more leaner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got to fill out that frame if he wants to fight Jones. But again, he's in no hurry to do it. They just love to have a go at each other, and it's because both of them are successful. And I think both of them know that, hey, you're taking my real estate, man. When you win and the spotlight's on you, it's not on me. I'm just going to go on there and, you know, on Twitter and maybe mouth off or whatever and get some of your shine. And then, boom, the other guy's going to want to steal it back. And that's how two cats all of a sudden just dislike each other. It just goes down.
I don't know why I'm not. I'm just not that interested in that fight. I feel
Or not ever?
Maybe even ever.
Oh, man, wait till you see what I got on tap here, and we're going to see how interested you are.
It's just that, like, at this point, we know John Jones is great. He's a great fighter. But really, what it comes down to is legacy. And if he wants to even pad that more, I think he's got to go up, not face guys that are coming up. That's not proven all that much. Like, he doesn't have much to gain in that fight.
Yeah.
If he beats Israel Adesanya, what's the first thing people are going to say? Hey, he's a middleweight. Why are you picking on the little guy?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you want to be the sophomore that beats up the senior, not the sophomore that beat up the freshman, right?
I agree, but he has been reluctant to move up to heavyweight, and there's three beasts right now. Well, one that he's beaten, Cormier. Cormier's a slightly different fighter as a heavyweight, but he's on his way out. But Miocic is formidable. You know, he's got hand size, KO power, confidence, wrestling, you know, and then the other one's Francis Ngannou. Holy cow. But enough on that. It was just MMA odds story. All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with some more news. Here we go. This is the stuff that's really going to upset goes. All right, goes. Here we go. We'll come back to some more MMA stuff, but I got to do it. There's just a lot of this, and it seems like every damn week I'm going to have to tell you about MMA and box. TJ Dillashaw wants to fight Floyd Mayweather upon his UFC return. Now, this guy's trained with Terence Crawford and Vasyl Lomachenko. So, and, you know, to his credit, he's one of the better strikers in the UFC because of his movement, footwork, head, hands, everything. He thinks he's got what it takes to fight Floyd. Now, he can't come back to competing until 2021. He feels like in 1 year, that would be enough for him to be able to compete. Now, Floyd would now be 33. Why does he say this? Floyd doesn't want to fight him. And when he comes back, wouldn't you want to pursue your own belt? Prove to people that you can get to the top without EPO and, you know, hopefully win some of your fans back? Like, why that?
I really don't know.
You might as well just say, hey, I became a champ at one time. When my year's up, I'd really love for the UFC to just cut me, and I will then go to boxing. That I could see. Okay, mm-hmm. You're done with MMA, or at least you're done with that part. But stop already. Stop.
It just makes no sense. Stop the madness. You know it's never going to happen. And even if it did, like, he would have to beat Floyd Mayweather the way Floyd Mayweather beats other fighters, because he's not really a power puncher. So he would have to outpoint Floyd Mayweather, and that's Floyd Mayweather's game. Like, I really don't understand why you could possibly put that matchup together, why anybody would even entertain, why Floyd would even give him the time of day. And it's nothing against TJ Dillashaw, but it just makes no sense.
Quentin Rampage Jackson would also like to lace up the gloves one time. He knows he's got Fedor Emelianenko next month, but he'll fight anybody except for Deontay Wilder. And then he kept the reel and said, well, I would fight Deontay Wilder for $100 million, once in boxing, once in MMA. If I was a TMZ guy, I think I just would have turned off the camera and said, we're in la-la land here. We're in fantasy land. You know what I mean? Like, look, folks, MMA athletes are elite athletes. But do you understand what it would take to close the gap on everything a boxer knows? Only way this could happen is some sort of a hybrid rules with 4-ounce gloves, and a boxer would not do that. But if you're going to go in the squared circle, it's just not going to go well for you unless you grew up boxing and actually boxed for a long time and then deviated to MMA for a little while, still retaining some of those skills. But I'm telling you, man, I've seen guys come up short. Great boxers come up short against other great boxers. They just don't have that skill. How are MMA athletes going to close that gap so quick? And whoever he fights, if it's a tomato can, yeah, then I guess you're going to get your boxing match, but you're not going to get anyone of note. Is he saying, like, not Wilder, but give me Joshua or Ruiz or Joseph Parker or whoever else, Tyson Fury. Come on!
I talked to Jake Ellenberger earlier this week, and we were talking a little bit about cross-promotion there. And what he was saying was, look, it was interesting back in the day. That's what the UFC was built on, right? Which style can be what. But after a while, we all figured it out. Everybody fell into place. The only time it does kind of interest him, and I'll give him that, is he says when it has to do with heavyweights. Because just heavyweights throw so hard that maybe you could see Stipe. It could be interesting putting him in there with someone. Chances are, if that boxer, maybe if he's having a bad night, maybe you can catch him. But for the most part, if he boxes, he's going to mop the floor with Stipe Miocic. Rampage Jackson, I mean, even less. Like, how many times have we looked at Rampage and went, has he really been training? At least with Stipe, like, you know he's going in. You go, okay, may not have been his night, but the guy looked like he wanted to be there and he was prepared.
Yeah.
I could see it maybe in heavyweights, George, but any other weight class, it's just silly.
I like how he says, I'm keeping it real. For $100 million, I'll fight him. We all would.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
I think I'd do it for $1 million. Save yourself 99, partner.
But these stories pop, and people want to talk about them, and I guess they want people to react to them. So there you go. Canelo Alvarez, I love the way he handled it. Goes, he got approached by TMZ again, and he said, the Jorge Masvidal matchup is good business but not challenging. To be more exact, he said this, and he said it so eloquently. He said, quote, I say this with all respect. If I go to his sport, I have nothing to do there, and I think the same about boxing. If MMA fighters come into boxing, they have nothing to do here. That's him being very, very kind, he told Little Giant Boxing. Continuing, he says, but looking at it from a business standpoint, it is attractive, but it's just not a challenge for me. It's not my priority. Mm-hmm. His way of saying it's not a challenge for me is his way of saying I would fuck that dude up. And I love me some Jorge Masvidal, But that's how I read him saying that. And guess what, folks? If I asked Jorge Masvidal, hey, off the record, what would happen if Canelo would come here? You know what Jorge would tell me? Goes, I fucked that dude up. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's that's what it is.
I like the way he put it. I wish more fighters would put it that way. I mean, it shows what kind of passion he has. I don't know if you caught this, but he also had kind of like a slight at Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, that's right.
And he was kind of just saying like, yeah, have fun with those MMA guys. Like,
yeah.
In other words, it's saying you're not really,
I like that it was
yourself.
Short, quick, definitive, and he just kind of walked away, kind of like sailed off into the sunset, except on foot.
Like it wasn't worth his time. And
really
that sums everything up so perfectly. It's not worth anybody's time because it doesn't solve anything.
It made it so that every other videographer, every other person, video blogger, whatever, that's walking around with a camera sees Canelo and says, man, I'm not even going to ask him. That fool's not even in the least bit interested in that subject. Let's ask him something else, but not that. You know what I mean? He's already been very, very definitive about that topic. So we'll leave him the F alone. Yeah. All right. Here's some news that we're going to switch a little bit back here to MMA. And we'll go through this quickly. Chris Weidman wants a quick turnaround. He thinks he's still capable of big things. Goes, I don't want to see that. I want Chris Weidman to take some time off. Now, I get it. The easiest way to erase the bad taste of a loss is to get back in the W column. But this guy's taking some vicious KOs. You know what I mean? I want to see him return to middleweight. And then we just want to see him take some time off. When he fights and when he's winning, he shows he's one of the top middleweights in the world. Right about the time he gets clipped, we all go, oh, I think he's done. You see how quickly that goes from like, hey, wait a minute. This guy looks pretty good, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden that happens. I don't want to see a quick turnaround for this guy. I want to see him take some time off and come back to middleweight.
I don't mind Chris Weidman fighting. I just want him to get some rest in him before he goes out and does that. And honestly, you see it. I see it. I see the reaction from fighters, from fans on social media. They see it. So you have to imagine the UFC sees it. And I think at some point they have to intervene and just say, look, bro, you need time off. If you want to keep doing this, you're going to need some time off. And I think that's fair. You know, I think Chris, he might have alluded to it in that interview. But I thought he said, like, I understand that fighters' chins are go away, but I just don't feel like I'm that guy. I think he should be okay with somebody telling him, you just need to rest, dude. I think he does. I don't mind if he comes back, but come back 9 months from now or something.
You know what another thing resting does?
Hmm.
Aside from you just not getting pummeled, you know, you get your head straight in many ways, psychologically, mentally, physically, is the division kind of does what it does. Like right now at middleweight, look at all the fighters that are ahead of him. Costa, even Romero with a 2-fight losing streak, he's being talked about having a shot. And then all of the other fighters that are mixed in there that will always just be ahead of them, they're just all in a big mix. Hermanson and Cannonier and all those guys. If you let 9 months to a year go by, some of those guys are going to lose. And then all of a sudden you're reintroduced to the division. And guess what? If Gastelum's in there, he can go, oh, I beat that guy. You know that bad streak I'm on? Well, he's one of the ones I actually beat.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden with the win, if Gastelum's still there, he can maybe position himself a little bit better.
He's
because by then,
name,
either
too.
A Hermanson or a Cannonier might lose or whatever. And then all of a sudden, they get a little bit of put off to the side. And that's how, you know, you can reintroduce yourself to a division. Like, in a way, Kevin Lee did it by accident. Kevin Lee had a poor run. Well, not a poor run, but he had lost, like, 2 out of 3 at lightweight. Then took a loss at welterweight. And then when he came back, he took out Gillespie and basically said, I'll take all of that Gillespie stock. Now I'm the man, you know what I'm saying? And with Cerrone dropping a few, with Poirier taking a loss, Felder or Hooker, so one of those guys, now all of a sudden Lee might be in that position to go, hey, what's going on over here? You know, remember me?
Let those guys all slap each other around for a little bit, and then you just pop in.
Exactly.
Remember me?
Right.
And if you're a guy like Chris Weidman, you got one of the best highlights ever, right? Go back and go, you know that great Anderson Silva that's up there on that Mount Rushmore? I took care of him twice. You can easily just pop back in, but... dude, give it some time. Really give it some time.
Randy Couture did some media. He detailed that health scare that he had, which was basically a heart attack, man. He said another 30 or 40 minutes could have been a different outcome. That was chilling to me, Goz, because we saw him at the gym the other day, and he was in such good spirits. He looked great, you know, but to know for him to kind of spill out what he did and how he had a training session. He felt like weight on his chest. He went back to his apartment and just wasn't feeling right. Walked himself to the hospital. And right then and then they assessed him and said, you're having a heart attack, and basically had to thin out his blood. That was something else, man. Basically, he had the thickness of his blood along with a clot that has been forming created that situation.
Mm-hmm. They had to put a stent in. They had to try and thin out his blood. But you're right. 40 minutes more, he could have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, another one that would have hit really, really close to home here in Las Vegas.
We actually ran into him, was it yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing his face, man, was like,
he lit up the room.
He totally did. I was so happy to
just
see him smiling.
But goes in a clinch there, right? He had you in a Greco-Roman clinch.
Trust me, at first, it was a good grip. It was kind of like, what the fuck, who's this?
Yeah.
And then as soon as I saw his big smile, I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you're the guy doing that to me right now.
Yeah, really, really nice guy. We hope the best for Randy Couture. And it sounds like he's already in the comeback trail. Goes. He said he did like 7 or 8 rounds the other day.
I don't know about
that. So he's training again, and I'm sure he's being looked after by the doctors to be able to do something like that. But all I can think of is about a year ago, maybe 11 months ago, if we really want to be exact, we were in Virginia. Mm-hmm. It was about 30 degrees outside, and these guys were doing some of the Army fitness tests. And, you know, they weren't even properly warmed up. They weren't in real athletic attire. Like, something like that,
so looked,
that little situation he had at the gym, something like that could have happened there, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
imagine?
I mean? Yeah, that's scary. Look after yourselves, folks. I got a buddy that texted me today. Jim Larkin's a friend of ours with Steve Straub as well. He said he sent a group text. Guys, I just had my I just did an appointment for my a complete physical. You know, stay on it, fellas. So I'm passing that on to everyone else as well. Stay on your health. Kyoji Horiguchi tore a ligament in his knee. I want to say it's refreshing, but I guess it just needed to happen. He relinquishes Bellator bantamweight title due to the knee injury. I just like the fact that he said, look, we're not going to even bother with the interim, I guess. I got this knee injury. Let the division live on, and so I'm going to relinquish it, and now you all can fight for it. I like when people step aside like that.
That is pretty cool. I'm curious, like, to what degree it tore, because –
Well, it'll require surgery, and it'll require a 10-month setback. So, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
Bad.
I don't know the details, but I'm sure that's a torn major cruciate ligament. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because everybody that described it was just like it must have been a really bad situation. You know, or like a not like a Willis McGahee, but you know something along those lines. Because for him to just do that, and on top of that, how long that recovery process is? I think that's just for him to be able to train again. You know, so good on him for doing that.
Anthony Pettis moves back to lightweight. He'll meet Diego Ferreira at that January 18th UFC event. I said I'd reference it later. Yes, folks, that event is going to be a fight night, not a pay-per-view. Basically, what it boiled down to, I think the UFC thought Conor McGregor would be back on this date. Hell, Conor McGregor said he would be back on this date. Has not happened. And with the fight card not being able to come together, because we are now technically less than 2 months away from that date, I think they just figured this is the easiest thing to do. And, of course, it's always a Vegas or L.A. card that gets
always,
screwed. And so that means we get screwed, but I guess I'm used to it by now. But I like the matchup.
It's a fun matchup, but, I mean,
and
we
Pettis
had such
belongs
high expectations.
At lightweight. When Pettis beat Thompson, and then Pettis, had he beaten Nate, then I would have said, keep riding the welterweight wave. I get it. You know what I mean? But once he became 1-1, like the Thompson wins – it's not as shiny because now what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. He's feeling some of that size. And Nate isn't even the biggest welterweight out there. Hell, Nate isn't really a welterweight. But I just think he belongs there. And it sucks because he's got a cut. But that's 15 pounds goes where Anthony Pettis is going to go, oh, fuck, so much easier at welterweight to stress. Weidman was saying the same thing. Look, 205 was less stressful, you know. He says, I can go back to middleweight. But that, he's got 20 pounds to worry about. This guy, 15 pounds. I will say it. I'll go back to it. I haven't done it in a while. We need to close the gap on these weight classes to 10 pounds. The sport's evolving in so many ways. Let's go from 105 at Invicta, the atom weight. If the UFC ever brings it, great. 15, 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75. Remove 70. Bring in 2. Remove 1. You only added 1. 85. I'm okay with 205 at this point. I don't think we need the 95 just yet. And then the heavyweights, I think we're fine there. But we have to close the gap. We have a lot of great fighters in all these divisions, and I think it could be a lot of fun.
I mean, even I think even if Pettis beat Nate, to me it'd be like you still haven't really solved much because, you know, Nate is one of the smaller guys. And but the thing is, a guy like Kelvin Gastelum has kind of proven that size doesn't always matter, right? Look how successful he's been up there.
Pretty much. All right, I think it's a good time to bounce on out of here, goes. We've filled our 30 minutes of MMA Junkie Radio bliss. So hopefully you guys are enjoying this new format. You know, it's a lot quicker than our traditional two-hour shows that we used to do. And I know some of you missed the two-hour shows, and nobody's saying we may never go back to it. But for now, this is the job. Please support us on our other ventures, like our video franchises series of the off-guard series, the rankings report, the spinning back click, and rest assured we will continue to contribute to the site in many different ways. And we've never shut the door on the long form or even adding more days. We are listening to the feedback, but for now, this is what it is. So thank you all for your support, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Go out there and be a champion.